How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, Happy Friday! Then you check your phone quickly and discover today is actually Friday. So yes, Happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.
Well, welcome to the latest episode of 90 Min and Pledge Ball's podcast series, Football's Climate Conversation, in which we take a look at how climate change is affecting the beautiful game. In this episode, we'll be discussing a very interesting interview I had with Scarlett Douglas, the TV presenter, and we'll also be looking at the Green Football Weekend campaign. Alex, it is lovely to see you. Welcome to this month's edition of the podcast.
Thanks, Katie. I'm glad to be back. Must have done something right in the first one. So here is the second appearance. How's your week been?
Yeah, it's been good. Although, as I said to you before, I've got a swollen eye, which I think has come from football. So I'm a little bit jaded this week, and I'm trying to angle my face sideways. So I apologise if the sound is a little bit off. How's your week been?
Good. Yeah, good. It's been a busy week in the sustainability world. So had the chance to attend the launch of UEFA's carbon calculator at the Emirates last week. So it was a really interesting event. All the football sustainability community coming together. And on a more broader strategic point, great to see and hear so many voices all aligned on the importance of sport and particularly football in driving change from a sustainability perspective. And hopefully the launch of that carbon calculator is the first step in many things to come in terms of football clubs taking this issue around climate change seriously and beginning to decarbonize.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of really interesting conversations around the carbon calculator. So before we delve into those, can you just give us a bit of an overview about what the carbon calculator is?
Yeah, I mean, so essentially the carbon calculator will be providing clubs the ability to calculate their own carbon footprint at And yeah, as the saying goes, if you can't measure it, you can't improve upon it. So I think it's a really good opportunity for some standardisation across football clubs in Europe to begin their journey on decarbonisation. So as you know, Katie, there are some football clubs and organisations that are a little bit ahead of the curve on this and have already calculated their own carbon footprint. But I think this is, you know, the raising of the tide for all clubs, essentially trying to bring all clubs up to the same level and get them all at the same start point and then hopefully make widespread change across European football. So I can only, from my perspective, I can only say it's a positive step taken by UEFA, despite some of the criticism that UEFA can receive and has received around maybe not doing enough in the space. It's a step in the right direction, which is always a good step.
Yeah, I'd agree. I think it's you're right in that it's a really nice way to essentially try and make all the reading completely consistent, all of those reading of the carbon emissions, so you get that baselining. And actually the other thing I really like about it is that UEFA are actually providing a practical means of supporting clubs with doing this, and just going out there and producing it means that they are in fact driving sustainability as a key part of their agenda. I guess the conversations I've heard around it where, and I can only assume that the calculator will evolve over time with this, is where this can be adapted to different organisations. So I think when people talk about carbon calculating, you're absolutely right. You need that carbon calculation. You need to know what emissions are going from where within your organisation. I think my one concern is where people prioritise that over taking action with it. Because if you get very hung up on carbon calculating, you don't do the obvious things that could be done to reduce footprint anyway. So I think that's my one concern. But I guess with this, at least there's a tool there that clubs aren't having to spend money on that they can simply use. I guess my only other question would be, around the usage of the tool, how practical it is for clubs, because there's such a range of clubs here we're talking about, you know, from Prem down to grassroots, really. And, you know, do they have capacity to put in the data? Can they have the data that the toolkit maybe requests? But I wonder whether that's a conversation we explore with some of these clubs who've used it, maybe in a future episode.
Yeah, it's a really good shout. And I completely agree with you, Katie. There's some elements where there's some common sense things that you can do just that, you know, will have an impact. For example, switching out halogen lights for LEDs is the one that comes to the top of my mind. But I would say from like a political standpoint and just driving change within organizations, I think potentially this is where the carbon calculator tool may come in really handy in terms of for the bigger clubs and the bigger organizations where there needs to be a bit more of a business case and rigor behind any activity that takes place and associated budget signed off to complete that activity. I think that carbon calculator tool will be a really useful tool to help at least begin that conversation and justify spend against sustainability.
Yeah, Ryan. Well, definitely one we should pick up then in future episodes and hear how people have used that tool. Okay, on to today then. So we obviously have been through Green Football Weekend. It was bigger, it was better this year than it was last year in its first inaugural year. And there was amazing conversations, as we talked about in the last podcast, around climate and Green Football Weekend as a result of this. And also stuff that supporters did. I mean, those Newcastle fans, I think we mentioned last time, who, you know, held a banner up to essentially support Green Football Weekend, but also to call out the difficulties with fixture scheduling and the issue that causes for people taking public transport home, I think is brilliant to see. So let's have a listen then, because I interviewed Scarlett Douglas, who was heavily involved. Yes, thank you. It was lucky me. She even sang to me, which is just amazing. You know, we haven't had that before. I think you might have to start doing that on podcasts where we don't have an interview with somebody singing.
No one wants to hear that.
What is the Norwich chant?
On the Ball City, oldest football song in English football.
Can we hear a sample of it?
Kick it off, throw it in, have a little scrimmage. That's the start.
Most of our chants currently seem to revolve around Thatcher's.
Nothing wrong with that either.
So I had the pleasure of interviewing Scarlett Douglas, who was a crucial part of Green Football Weekend. She, as she will explain in the interview, got involved with Matthew Flamini with an activation there around the Arsenal-Liverpool game, which was one of the big games around Green Football Weekend. So should we have a little listen to the interview and then a little chat?
Sounds good.
Well, Scarlett, thank you very much for joining us today. I'm absolutely delighted to have the opportunity to interview you. I've got a few questions to throw your way, so I hope you're ready this morning.
Yes, I'm ready and waiting. Let's go. Let's get into it.
Amazing. Right. So first of all, I'd love you to introduce yourself to everybody and, you know, feel free to throw in a bit of your backstory, because we have a lot of people who are obviously particularly fascinated around how footballers become footballers. So I'd love to hear a bit of that background as well.
So my name is Scarlett Douglas. I am a TV presenter and host. And my journey into football, I guess, would probably be the same as any little girl, really. My brothers both played football themselves. My mum was a huge football fan, is a huge football fan. But even at school, I used to play all the time. And I would definitely be the first one picked on a team. If there was a team captain and they wanted to, you know, get their team together, they would always go for me because they knew that I would be in there, whether it's going for a tackle, whether it was going up front to try and score, whether it was even in goal to save a penalty. I remember we had like a tournament at school and I was in goal to save the last penalty and I did it and my team won. And even to this day, I feel euphoric by it. So it's just something that's kind of always been in my blood. We're big, big, big Arsenal fans. And the way I kind of got into playing football for Arsenal girls, a lot of people have heard that story, is because my brother Andrew Douglas, he used to play there. So when he was playing, my mum would obviously go and watch him. And then rather than put me in the creche or me just sitting around doing nothing, she would put me in with the Arsenal girls and I'd be running around kicking the ball and whatever. And I think looking back at it now, I loved it so much. And I think if I had continued, who knows, I could have even played for England. I could have done so many other things with it. But back then, it wasn't really a sport that girls could take seriously to becoming female woman footballers. And I was lucky enough to be in the jungle with Jill Scott And we kind of sat and really had a conversation about it. And if I had continued to pursue football, I could have been playing in a team with Jill, and that would have been amazing. So it's something that I'm so glad now little girls can see as a career path for themselves. And it's nice to be able to do things like Green Football Weekend, where I'm still a part of football. I was in Soccer Aid last year for UNICEF, so I still got to play for England at Old Trafford. So I'm definitely still in football to a certain degree. My skills are not as brilliant as they were when I was maybe 6 or 7, but I still really enjoy it.
Amazing. I mean, there's a couple of things there which really kind of strike me. One is the fact that I was following this kid on the school run one day, and he must have been, I don't know, early teens, and he was telling this girl next to him about this goal he'd scored, but a goal he'd scored at primary when it was like the winning goal of the match. And, right. You know, just like you described there, I think the amazing thing about football is we all remember those moments when we've absolutely nailed it. And it's just a moment like no other. I love that.
Exactly.
Amazing.
And I think like that's how I feel, having just been at school and saving a goal. But imagine you on that big pitch, whether it is a World Cup goal or a Euros goal, or just for your team to be promoted or win the league or win the FA Cup. Like, that must be a feeling that you will never, ever forget.
Yeah, completely. And I mean, the other thing that you touched upon there that I think is really, well, really pertinent is the fact that obviously, you know, football was not for women, was not seen in the same way for you. The opportunities weren't there. And same for a lot of the Lionesses now, a lot of them will have had to have fought to get to where they are now. Whereas now, right from the bottom, the game is very different. You look at the standard of the Lionesses now, imagine what the standard is going to be like when those girls are supported right from the get-go.
Yeah. And let's think about it as well. These ladies weren't paid for playing football, so they still had another job, or they had to try and find sponsorship from somewhere, but they loved it so much and they believed in themselves so much and in the game and making that change that they just continued and continued. And that in itself is something that I think we all need to think about and take heed in, is that if we want to make a change, we absolutely can. We just have to stick to it, be driven, and not take no for an answer. And again, that's what's great about Green Football Weekend, is that little by little, if we all get involved, we can make that change. And it will just be that a few years down the line, certain things that have been put in place for Green Football Weekend are just the norm, and we don't question it. And we could be like, oh my goodness, that must have been so difficult back then, or can't believe that that wasn't the case back then. And now that change has happened, and it's better for not just us as people, but also for the world and for making football more green.
You're absolutely right. That's a lovely transition there. Well done.
You're welcome.
You're absolutely right. And I think one of the things that's really stark there in terms of normalizing it is, you know, we used to see Benson and Hedges advertised, the cigarettes advertised on the hoardings. Now you never see that, because essentially they kill people.
Exactly.
At the moment, we see fossil fuel sponsorships. You know, we see Total sponsoring like the Rugby World Cup. All of those things, you know, we're going to look back on in a very different way that are accepted as norm now.
Yeah.
So moving on to Green Football Weekend then. Did you enjoy Green Football Weekend?
I absolutely loved it. I'd actually been seeing adverts kind of to the lead up to the specific weekend that I was involved in. So that was the 3rd of February, and it was Arsenal versus Liverpool. I got to be with the legend that was Matthew Flamini. And it was great. We had some kids there, and we had all girls actually that played a little game first of all. And then we went into a small room, literally just around the corner from Arsenal, so the little Arsenal hub. And we cooked up this amazing meal, and it was just brilliant. It was a great day. We had so much fun, and it was really insightful, actually. And just some of the stats that I learned over that weekend, like, for example, if we continue to all substitute one meat meal a day for a veggie meal for a year, it'll be the equivalent of taking 5.5 million cars off the road for a year. So that's like a big deal. And that is just thinking differently. So you might be able to go to a football game, and instead of having the beef burger, you're having a bean burger, or you decide to go for, I don't know, a margarita pizza slice rather than a pepperoni. Just these small changes really can make a difference. And I genuinely enjoyed the weekend and just learning about these things. And of course, being with Matthew Flamini, because being a big Arsenal fan, he's a legend, and he was the nicest guy ever. So it was... Yeah, it was good. And I really wanted to support Green Football Weekend as well, because I think it empowers people and helps people realise and understand that every change that we make, no matter how small, really can make a difference. And that could be, like I said, eating less meat or maybe walking instead of driving to games or getting on the tube or something. It really can make a positive impact. And I think it's something that we can all do that's simple and doable. And sometimes people think, oh, it's such a small thing, I don't need to worry about it, it's not going to make a difference if I do it. But actually, the more one person does it, the more it might influence somebody else to do it, and more it might inspire somebody else to do it. And I think that's when a lot more people are aware of what it is that they're doing and how their actions can help. And if us as fans are putting that pressure on football clubs, for example, football clubs really need to think, okay, we need to do this, that and that, because our fans are getting behind us. And as a club, you are a team. And yes, you've got the footballers, yes, you've got the management, but you also have the fans. That is what creates a football club. So I think it's something that people might think is too small, but you've got to start somewhere to then make that big change and have that big movement.
You make so many great points there. I mean, 100%, it's about trying to get people to do, like you said, the small things and realizing the impact of it. Because, you know, we all want the clean air, we all want, you know, the stable food systems. But as you said, it feels very overwhelming. You think, what is the point of me just doing this? But yeah, actually the collective impact, as you illustrated from that stat, is huge. And everybody can get involved. Everybody can have an impact at whatever point they're comfortable, whether, as you said, it's reducing meat consumption, or whether it's doing something else, whether it's up to, you know, using your voice, writing to your club and asking them. And you're absolutely right. That's a perfect illustration of how those kind of small changes start to gather momentum. You reach that kind of inflection point and it puts pressure on businesses and clubs to make those changes.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, people don't realise the power they can have. That's I know, really beautifully put.
And if we look at the biggest sport here in the UK, that is football. And there are hundreds and thousands of football fans. There are loads of us, more so if we take out the players and, you know, the management from the club, there are so many more fans. So if we can come together collectively and individually make that change, like I said, all together, it's really going to make a difference.
Yeah, 100%. And we've seen fans rallying behind stuff before. I mean, the European Super League, we've seen that, you know, crushed by fans protesting. So there is a huge amount that we can do to accelerate this change.
Yeah.
Did you have a chance to look at the Green Football Weekend recipe book?
I did. And there are quite a few bits in there that I loved. So I think, was it Levi Roots? I think he had some patties in there, like veggie patties. There was also Ainsley Harriet. He had, was it like a butternut squash, like pastry thing, which sounded lovely, although it had pecans in it and I don't eat nuts, so I would make it without the pecans. But also Demi Stokes, so she had a red pea soup recipe, and being Jamaican myself, it is so good. I love red pea soup. So normally you can put gammon in it, or any sort of pork you can put in this dish, but I don't eat pork, and obviously we're talking about veggie weekend, so you can absolutely make it without that. So the red pea soup, oh my gosh, it's delicious, it's hearty, it's full of protein. So obviously you've got the beans in there, so you've got the coconut milk, first of all, that gives it a really aromatic sweetness. The peas, as we call them, but red kidney beans, they go soft, and then a lot of the nutrients are there in a lot of the nutrients from that are then absorbed into the soup. And then it gives the soup a lot of depth, and it gives that nice red, rich colour. And I just think soups are good anyway. On a cold day, if you're going to a football game, and it's cold, which happens a lot here in England, a good hearty soup is what you want. So this was probably one of my favourite recipes in the book.
I love that. You've sold it way better than anybody else has sold any recipe in that book. We should just get you to talk through each of those recipes.
I'd do that for sure. No worries.
Were there any in there that really stuck out and you thought, not a chance?
Do you know what? I will give anything a try. I'm not a tofu fan at all. And I think I did it with Jen Beatty when I was with Flamini, and it got cooked up, and everything looked amazing until the tofu went in, and I was like, I will make that dish minus the tofu. So anything in the recipe book, I will absolutely eat without the tofu. I don't know, there's something about it, it just doesn't work for me.
Fair dues. I mean, I thought this until somebody deep fried tofu for me, and it's like crispy on every edge, and it's more like, it's more like paneer.
Okay. Yeah,
so I definitely recommend doing that, like slice it up and then deep fry it, and it tastes really good.
Thank you very much.
Let me know how that goes.
I will.
So you've talked a little bit well, really passionately about why you wanted to support Green Football Weekend. Of course, we're really grateful for your support with it. I mean, I guess, is sustainability, is it something that you've always been aware of? Is it something that you kind of try to talk to other people about? Or is it Green Football was you and you thought, actually, this is something that, of course, I care about and want to address?
Yeah, so it's definitely something that even before Green Football Weekend, I've been very aware of and I've been very conscious of. And because my my current expertise at the moment is within property and interior design, we are always looking at ways that we can be as sustainable as possible, whether that is recycling materials, whether that is you've got a pot of paint that you don't need the rest of it for your house. Actually, you can sell that on and give that on for somebody else to use. So it's not getting thrown away, wasted, and the container's not just ending up on landfill. So it's always something that's been at the forefront of my mind, but it's good to look outside of my expertise of property and interiors and how else can I help make the world as green as possible. And I think football clubs, again, like I said, they're huge here. And if they can make a change, whether that is Green Football Weekend and they're bringing out meals or they're selling certain things at half time that are green, that is, I think, super important. But I know you've got a lot of fans say, yeah, but hang on a second, you've got football clubs that are flying from A to B for a game and they're flying back, so surely that's not good. And I'm very aware of that and I agree with them. And I do think that these are things that clubs need to look at and need to address as best as possible. If it is that they're getting on a train instead, or they're getting on a coach that's maybe an electric coach, there are all these other things that clubs can do as well. But we just have to think, how best can we make that change from now? How can we start that from now? And maybe it is that we have to look at the kits that football clubs are wearing. Are these tops, are the clothes, are the shorts, are they made from recycled fabrics? If not, is that something that can be done? Because I think these are little small changes that are super easy to be done. And I think it's important that clubs can do more to highlight what they're doing to help. Because it's all very good and well, us all trying to do something, but what are the clubs doing? And I think the more they speak up about it, then I think the better it is. So I really support anybody, fans, clubs, players that are trying to help with sustainability and trying to help be as green as possible.
Really good points there. And I mean, I think, you know, we've touched upon the need for fans to speak up and really encourage clubs to become, I guess, braver in the way that they're addressing this. Because also, yeah, I imagine, you know, we've already seen in Germany and the Bundesliga, they've introduced sustainability criteria into licensing. Mm-hmm. We've seen rulings in France and Italy around which domestic flights you can take and mm-hmm. a ban on domestic flights under a certain amount of time. And we don't want to be the last in that. We want to be driving this forward.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you think, you know, going back to your conversation around kind of norms and what is accepted, do you think there'll be a time in the future when we look back and we're kind of appalled at the way in which
100%.
Clubs disregarded stuff now?
100%. And I liken this to things such as way back in the day, you didn't need to have a seatbelt in your car. Now, could you imagine thinking, oh my goodness, there's no seatbelt? Or we had seatbelts, but there wasn't that annoying pinging noise if your seatbelt wasn't on. These are things that are now in place that we can't imagine those never being there. And I think we're definitely going to be in a position where in a few years' time, hopefully sooner rather than later, we're looking back and thinking, we can't believe we did that, or this was never in place. And I would love to see clubs doing more to highlight like changes that can be made. And I think there should be maybe a stringent green charter that all the, 92 football league clubs, they should sign up to. And then that can promote the best practices in like how they operate in the greenest and most environmentally friendly way. And, you know, I'm not saying that I'm myself as one person capable of creating and drafting a pledge, but I do think it's something that could be done by whether it's everybody or by the FA or Premier League, whoever. But I think it should include things like limiting the amount of air travel that's done to matches, or Arsenal, my team that I love, obviously, they ensure that all of the packaging of their food and drinks on a match day are made from recyclable materials. And I think that's great. And they don't use single plastics at all anymore, single-use plastics at all. And I just think it would be good to get to a point where, like I said, football kits are recycled materials, apparel, gifts, anything that you can go into the gift shop or the Arsenal shop or the football shop to get are products of recyclable materials, upcycled, anything like that. And I just think clubs can do so much, but us as fans can do so much. And it would be good if, even going back to grassroots, like the training grounds, let's look at the training grounds. Are these training grounds as sustainable as possible? Are they being powered by maybe renewable energy sources? There are so many layers to this that can really make a difference. And I do think in a few years' time, we'll look back and think, thank goodness we made that change then, because actually now look at what we've got. We've got a great infrastructure, and it's...
How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, Happy Friday! Then you check your phone quickly and discover today's actually Friday. So yes, Happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com. Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.
As sustainable as possible.
I mean, you heard it here. That is amazing. I would like to soundbite that and just share that. That I think it was sums it up really nicely. I'll be sharing that very widely.
Thank you. Please do. And let's try and make it happen. Maybe we can set up a petition or something. And
well, and really I totally agree. Yeah, absolutely. And I think there is so much that can be done. And, you know, you touch upon apparel, which is a really big one. There are big EU regulations coming in around that, around the fact that companies need to start taking responsibility for the entire life cycle of a piece of apparel. And what people don't realise is the impact of these, both in terms of the emissions generated to make them, but also where do they go? And, you know, we also have the difficulties that I think clubs need to take a lead on understanding, such as with recycled materials. If you make apparel out of recycled materials, it shortens the ability or the life cycle of it to be recycled. So, you know, all these tops that are made of recycled plastic bottles, actually it's taking them out of a circular waste stream because you can't recycle that. So then they end up in landfill and they have to be incinerated. The other issue, of course, is that when we wash these synthetic fibres, they wash out microplastics, which, as we know, is ending up in our seas, in our drinking water. And even they've found in, you know, the breast milk of babies. In our food, exactly. And all of these things are slowly building up that I think clubs have a real capacity as huge players in businesses to really look into and start to drive change in a positive way.
They have to. I mean, if we look at what every season, there's a new home kit, away kit, third kit, an extra kit just because they want to. And maybe let's bring in a fifth kit because we have another idea that we want to bring out halfway through the season, or a collaboration. That's a lot. That is so much. And if every season, you know, parents are trying to buy these for kids or fans are buying their own top, you're right. What happens to the others? Yes, of course we can keep them. I've still got my Arsenal tops from when we were sponsored by JVC and Dreamcast. I've got all of those. I keep them, but not everybody does keep them. And you're right. It's just going to end up on landfill, and it's something absolutely needs to be done. Absolutely needs to be done. And it's just about making that change and taking that first step to be able to do that.
Someone suggested to me that we should just all start putting our waste in the back in our own back gardens.
But do you know what? Visually, could you imagine that?
I can. It's terrifying. My
God. Yeah, it would be crazy. You see how much waste you genuinely make, and that's just in your own back garden. So imagine the street one day come out and they've got everybody's back garden on the street. And then when you start to think about that, how much waste we all do make, you know, that's all going into landfill. How can we address that? How can we tackle that? And yes, we absolutely can do something as small people, but we need the big clubs, the big teams, the big companies to see how important it is to us to then help them be like, actually, we need to make that change. We need to make that change.
Yeah, so definitely. And I mean, that goes... I wish you'd broken into song there. Please, please go for it.
Gonna make a change for what's in my life.
That was amazing. We've not had a guest on yet that sings.
There you go.
That's started a new trend. Yeah, exactly. There are some wonderful points covered there. I really think there are some fantastic points you make, and I love the ambition. I'd be interested to know what you think of, you know, I imagine that other people feel very similar to you, players, professionals, you know, celebrities. But why don't more people speak out about it?
You know, that's a great question. And sometimes I think it's because maybe they feel that their voice isn't big enough. Because when I first got asked to get involved with Green Football Weekend, I was like, oh my God, amazing. But who's going to listen to me? And the minute we start to change that mindset and think about it, just takes one person to hear what it is that I've said for that person to tell someone else, to tell someone else, to tell someone else. And the bigger your voice, the louder it's heard. And I do think that footballers can be speaking up a lot more. Clubs can be speaking up a lot more. And you know what? Sometimes it's not even what's said, it's what's done. I'm a strong believer of actions speak louder than words. And sometimes there could be a situation where I don't speak up, but I do something instead. And that action is what then hopefully makes the change, or is a catalyst to something changing. So I think sometimes we need to not focus on the fact that somebody hasn't said something, it's what has that person done. Because I think you can do a lot more without saying it. And sometimes I worry that people just want to say something to be heard, but don't actually action that. Whereas I'd rather see people making the action, but not having to speak about it. So I think, yes, people should speak up more, but also let's not blame them if they're not speaking up, because we don't know what they're doing behind their voice.
That's a great point. I think also there's a lot of fear of, as you said, not having an impact, but also fear of being criticised. But I think the other thing here that a lot of people don't realise, we see footballers, you know, like Marcus Rashford standing up for free school meals. But I think what I'd like, you know, everybody's very sympathetic around that, whereas speaking up about climate seems to be very stigmatised still. But what I'd like, I think, people to see is the link between those. I mean, we talked about the women's game earlier in the interview. And of course, the women's game is already being hugely impacted by climate change more than the men's game, because, you know, it's an insane, I think it's 5 weeks of football every year are lost due to the impact of weather caused by climate change. Yeah. And of course, the women's teams don't tend to have access to all weather pitches to the same degree that the men's teams do. Mm-hmm. And we're only going to see that happening more and more. But also when it comes to, you know, free school meals and the cost of living, those people who are most impacted by climate are those who are most vulnerable and actually are contributing least to climate change. You know, those people, you know, the cost of food becomes more expensive because of our access, you know, because of what becomes seasonal, what used to be able to grow effectively and can't anymore because of new conditions. And we don't see those links, but it's incredibly unfair, especially because actually those people who are probably least affected by climate are the ones who generally, you know, produce the most emissions. So I think there's also that aspect where we need to see that this is unfair and people need to rally from that quarter in the same way that we do around free school meals.
Yeah.
Okay. I think, so to finish off, because I know you have to go, and I'm so grateful for your time this morning. It's been a real pleasure. I guess one last thought, what would you like to see happen in football with regards to climate change within, I don't know, the next year or so?
That's a great question. I would love, like I said, if they can create this kind of green charter that everybody, all the clubs can sign up to and agree that by this date, they would have addressed X, Y, and Z. That for me would be such a huge start and such a big turning point. So that's something that I think would be brilliant. They're all kind of making a pledge and a promise to changing whatever they can, whether that is the apparel, whether that is they don't take as many flights per season, even if they halve that and then maybe halve that again. If we can get all 92 Football League clubs to pledge that by this date, and I don't want to say an unrealistic date, but let's say if we are talking a year from now, we would have done XYZ to help address climate change. That would be brilliant. So if we can get the Green Football Weekend pledge going, that would be fantastic. It really would be, because that means that you've pledged something, you've started, you've given us your promise that you want to make a difference, and you need to stick to that. And we need to see in a year's time, did you address all of these points? If you didn't, why didn't you? And how are you going to do that in as quick as time as possible?
So there she was, Scarlett Douglas. And I mean, what a voice. That was amazing, wasn't it? What were your kind of key takeaways from that then, Alex?
I think similar to when we heard Joe Cole talking about Green Football Weekend, what was really refreshing from Scarlett's perspective is how common sense a lot of things to do with sustainability are, and how she related it to other kind of infrastructural systems change that's taken place in the world, like wearing a seatbelt in a car and cars having seatbelts. And, you know, I'd add my own, like the tax or the extra fees on plastic bags. And now, you know, most people will take their own bags to supermarkets rather than buy fresh ones. So, yeah, I think it was just really refreshing to hear her perspective as someone who hasn't necessarily come from a sustainability background, being fully on board with what Green Football Weekend stands for and embracing that change as well. And also, she just had a really good football chat too, right? So great. Always great to hear from someone who is a big fan of football, family loves football. She must be really happy about the Arsenal result at the time of recording. They've just got through against Porto on penalties. So, yeah, I think it's always good to hear these voices come from real football heads who get sustainability too.
Yeah, you're exactly right. That's what came through for me, was just as you said with Joe Cole, it just makes sense, which is what we need to hear more. And I think that's the other thing. I mean, we obviously held a workshop as Pledge Ball a couple of weeks ago with some researchers, actually, who looked around how, you know, were sharing their advice around how we can basically rally the football community to really drive change and how we can engage more people to do that. And one of the key things that came out from that, which I think is a point for hope, was something called pluralistic ignorance, where you always assume that other people don't care as much as you do. And this is particularly true of climate, because people don't tend to talk about it. It's weirdly a taboo subject. And I think hearing Joe Cole, hearing Scarlett talk about these things makes you realise that, of course, other people care. And actually, I've heard a lot about Robbie Savage since his involvement in Green Football Weekend, about how interested he's also been, because it just makes sense. I think the other things that really stuck out there was, one, how well she sold the recipe book. I mean, it was a great recipe book, but she just sold a lot of those recipes. I think that recipe book is still available at greenfootweekend.com. So do go and use recipes there. If anyone wants to particularly share their dishes they've made, or any particular feedback, any players who've given particularly amazing or particularly awful recipes, do feel free to send those in to us. But the other thing I wanted to talk about was, you know, her story of getting involved as a player in football, and, you know, her time in the jungle with Jill Scott, how, you know, that discussion made her realise she could actually have, you know, gone on, played professionally, played, you know, for England potentially. And of course, we've got coming out this film, Copa 71, about this, you know, World Cup, this Women's World Cup in Mexico, that is still the best attended Women's World Cup to this day, which is incredible when you look at the audiences now. But I just think it's so, and I commented on this obviously in the interview, but I just think that it is still so stark, that difference between the men's and the women's game. And you look at the quality of the Lionesses now, and yet still they've had to fight to get there. And a lot of them in their lead up there have had, you know, a job at the same time as training in their journey to become international players. So you imagine how great they're going to be going forwards. I think it's still so worth noting, particularly after International Women's Day, about those stark differences between the men's and the women's game still.
Completely. But I think that's why the women's game is so exciting, because there's still so much more potential and road to run when it comes to the women's game. So I'm actually going to see Copa 71 tomorrow. And as an added aside, I'm taking my, well, not all of them, but at least half of my under 12 girls grassroots team to go see it too. So I'm really hoping that inspires them as well and helps them catch the football bug too. But taking it back to sustainability, I think that's why, you know, as I said earlier, there's so much road to run for the women's game, and sustainability is an area where some of, you know, the more, let's say, like established leagues and men's football, quite frankly, maybe haven't taken the risks or made the strides that they could have done so far when it comes to sustainability. So from my perspective, I think there's a huge opportunity for women's football to embrace sustainability from the ground upwards and make it part of the fabric of the growth of women's football in a financially and environmentally sustainable way, where as the men's game is, there's a bit of a retrofit activity that has to take place to try and maybe take a step backwards or a step sideways to go a step forwards when it comes to sustainability. So that's my view on it. What do you think, Katie?
I mean, definitely. I mean, this is something I feel very passionately about, especially as, you know, the women's game, the WSL moves away from the FA. I just think there is a prime opportunity to embed it, you know, and especially because one of their key things is making the women's game sustainable. And right now, it is not sustainable, and not just from an environmental, you know, not looking at it from an environmental standpoint, but look at the pyramid, look at the feed-in. There are so many games rained off. I mean, right now, I know, for example, your under 12s team, all of your games have been, you know, rained off over the past few weeks. It happens more in the women's game because they don't tend to have access to the, you know, all-weather pitches, for example. And that's really going to affect our pyramid, and it's going to continue to do so. But the other thing is that I think the audience of the women's game, from research, potentially is much more concerned around this. And so, you know, in terms of engaging your fans and having values that are resonating with your fans, it is a prime opportunity to have them involved in this, you know, evolution of the women's game, essentially.
Yeah, I completely agree. Couldn't agree more. I mean, like, how mad is that, you know, when it comes to grassroots football, you're spot on. I mean, my girls' team didn't play a game in the whole month of February. So we had about a 4 to 5 week break, including half term, because the pitches were too flooded and dangerous to play on, which is, you know, real shame, just not only from an environmental perspective, but from a health and well-being perspective. They want to be out there playing matches and developing, and because they find that the most fun. But that's grassroots. And when you think from the professional side, our top women's league is still having games rained off is absolutely insane, right? And I think there's a broader point here around the commercialization of women's football and how there's a race at the moment for there to be the kind of ultimate leading women's football league globally, like the Premier League cracked it in the 90s when it was the first to be broadcast internationally. There's a real race for the women's equivalent to be out there amongst, you know, some of the top nations: England, the US, France, Italy, Spain, probably the top ones in the mix who are going to become the go-to women's football league. So there's a real opportunity here, not just from a commercial perspective, but from a sustainability perspective, which league is going to be the one that cracks it and has clubs that are financially sustainable, self-sufficient, and make a positive impact on the environment too. Because you're spot on, Katie, there's a lot of women's clubs, those join with the men's clubs at the moment, where it's seen as a bit of a goodwill activity, and there's a lot of owner funding or men's club funding that goes into to balance the books, essentially. And ultimately, if women's football continues to grow as it is, then they're going to pay for themselves, they're going to become financially sustainable. But it's getting to that path of financial sustainability in a sustainable way, rather than just pumping lots and lots of money into it until it becomes financially sustainable. And to that point, you have to give, you know, a round of applause to a club like Arsenal, who are really putting their women's team in their men's stadium at the moment at the Emirates, and they've sold out a couple of games now, I think, and in the last month or so. And I think they had five games at the Emirates. They're having five games at the Emirates this season for their women's team, which is brilliant, because that's where, you know, top level women's football needs to be played. It needs to be played in front of stadiums that can hold tens of thousands of people. And that clearly demonstrates that there is the demand for women's football at the moment in some instances. But to that point around, you know, the UEFA carbon calculator raising the tide for all. It's the same with women's football, right? It will start off with clubs like Arsenal, and hopefully sooner rather than later, we'll see all of the big Premier League clubs putting their women's teams in their club stadiums, and hopefully having tens of thousands of spectators attending too.
Well, and let's just give a shout out to Bristol City Women here, because of course they've been playing in Ashton Gate all season as part of the WSL, but they've also attracted huge, huge record-breaking crowds.
Yeah, I think they're like 7,000-8,000.
Yeah. So, you know, there's a lot. And I think one of the great things about that is the experience they create when people go to that ground. And I think that's another key thing when it comes to sustainability, is you can create this wonderful environment that essentially can showcase like local businesses, things that support sustainable choices, whether it's like free bike servicing, whether it's just exposure to, I don't know, council funding, for example, around air source heat pumps. It's a real opportunity on these game days itself, when you have so many from the local community, to really ensure that you are showcasing what local offerings are there that allow people to make more sustainable choices. So before I hand over to Heather in a minute, should we do a little teaser about what's coming up on the next episode? So yes, we are interviewing Will Troostekong, who is a Nigeria captain just out of AFCON. And of course, he was quite heralded at AFCON. There was a lot of noise around it because he wore some Sokoto boots, the most sustainable football boots. So it'd be really interesting to have a chat both with him, but also with Jake, who is CEO of Sokoto. And of course, we will be talking a little bit more about some exciting news that we have recently had, and opportunities for those listeners to get involved there and potentially win some pretty amazing prizes. So, shall I break the news, or would you like to do it, Alex?
Well, hang on. First of all, can I just say, Troostekong, player of the tournament at the AFCON as well, which just proves that sustainable football boots, maybe they give you magic powers too, right? Came up with a few goals and actually won player of the tournament, and was pretty close to winning the whole thing too. So we always have that challenge, right, around sustainability. Does it pay? Well, it clearly made no negative impact on his performance, and maybe it made a positive impact, but we'll find out from him, won't we, when we interview him too. So, yes, so
that's, let's move on. Was it your magic boots?
Yeah, exactly. Was it the magic boots? But yeah, exciting news. But I'll let you break the news, Katie.
So we at Possible, are you doing a drum roll? So we have been lucky enough at Pledge Ball to win UEFA's Champions Innovate programme, which means that we get to work with MasterCard and essentially engage more fans around the Champions League around climate and sustainability, and really showcase the really significant impact we can have. And going back to Scarlett's interview, make some noise about the number of people who care to also accelerate that infrastructural change. So that is all coming up in future episodes. But right now, let's invite Heather into the room for a roundup of what happened at Green Football Weekend and what the Pledge Ball League is currently looking like.
Great. Thank you, Katie. So yeah, we were delighted that during Green Football Weekend, we saw fans from over 117 football teams from all leagues, both men and women's team from all over the UK, get involved. So the winner of Green Football Weekend, becoming back-to-back champions, was Manchester United, scoring a massive 4,172 goals. Northampton Town was the runner-up, with Chelsea in third, Leicester City in fourth, and Brentford in fifth. Special shout-outs to FC United, who are the top non-league side at 28th, Swansea were the top Welsh side in 39th, and Dundee United, the top Scottish team, in 55th. Manchester United women also took top spot in the women's standings, with Chelsea women in second, West Ham United women in third. So once again, it's fantastic to see so many people get involved in Football Weekend this year, and congratulations to the prize winners. Now that Green Football Weekend is over, we head back to the Pledge Ball League. So let's look at current standings. So we've got Northampton Town in top place at the moment, top of the league, with Forest Green Rovers not far behind. Manchester United and Norwich City complete our top four. Also delighted to see that Pledge Ball's most recent new partner, Dundee United, currently sixth in the league. So great to see some Scottish representation there. It's great to see so many fans getting involved so far, and we have some fantastic prizes available this year, including a season's worth of free away train travel courtesy of our partner TrainSplit, and free sustainable consulting for the women and men's club that win, courtesy of our main partner RSK, and all our partner clubs are offering club prizes such as signed shirts. So it's really worth getting involved and supporting your team when you can.
Amazing. Thank you, Heather. And I mean, Alex, give some shout outs to those clubs.
Well, you've got to start with Norwich, to be expected at the top. Many things, right? So we'll move on swiftly from them. No, it's really pleasing to see the Tangerines, aka Dundee United's new partner to Pledge Rule, coming on board and making an instant impact too. And then look, let's shout out all the smaller clubs, all the so-called smaller clubs, like Northampton Town as well, the Cobblers. Absolutely brilliant to see them up there as well. And they're doing some really good work, not only with us in the Pledge Rule League and their fans, but also across Green Football Weekend too. They were high up in the league table as well. So, yeah, it's great to see fans from clubs of all sizes contributing, and also, you know, fans of the so-called smaller clubs really packing a punch when it comes to sustainability and fan engagement.
Yeah, it is amazing. I love to see like all the League One, League Two clubs absolutely trouncing the Premier League clubs. Amazing.
Exactly. Come on, Prem teams, step it up.
Amazing. Well, thank you very much. I hope you've enjoyed this episode as much as I have, and we'll look forward to seeing you on future episodes.
How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, Happy Friday! Then you check your phone quickly and discover today's actually Friday. So yes, Happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.